So I don't know how many of you have already worked on your Purim costumes. But let's take a look at, we'll start with the Shulchan Aruch, and we will go from there. This is towards the very end of the laws of Purim, which for that matter is the very end of Shulchan Aruch Arachayim. Just like really, literally, you go from the last page and go backwards, and you will find this. It says, it starts off with the Mechaber telling us, Mutar Lisa Isha Bapurim. I believe it's speaking to males. And it says, one is permitted to wed on Purim. Okay. Now, why would you say no? That would be, you know, the bigger question. What would be the problem getting married? And presumably the problem would be that maybe you would suspect that either the chatan or the kala or somebody along the line over here is drunk. Or for that matter, the witnesses. I once performed a wedding on Shushan Purim in Yerushalayim, and I can assure you that everybody was drunk. And not only that, the wedding, the invitations went out that people need to come in costume. So the two witnesses that I had, one was Elvis and the other was Charlie Chaplin.
It's the only wedding in history where Elvis was an
aide. And
what about the
Masada? No, he came dressed as a rabbi, but which was quite bizarre in and of itself. But I really had to check to make sure that at least the Edom were not imbibed. I figured it was a guy who was married once before, and maybe he was trying to already get his way out prepared just in case. But
to add to the simcha.
Needless to say, one is permitted to get married on Purim. Generally, there's a problem of adding simcha to simcha. You also have a problem of kinyanim, whatever. But over here, Purim, one is allowed to get married. The Ramah then adds, bein b'yudalad, bein b'tetvav. This is true that one can get married, if any of you are looking. I mean, one can do it either on the 14th or on the 15th, which are both days of otherwise of simcha. Ufkoshken shemutar lasot pidyon haben, and so on. And then we get to the part that we wanted to get to. Then the Ramah adds a section which, if I can quote later authorities, they would have preferred he not write this. They would have preferred that he would have paid more attention and not have said something which was so objectionable. But what is it that he says that people find so disturbing? Umasha nahagu lilvosh partzufim bipurim. So what does that mean? What are partzufim? Which is even our... Most likely the way the word is being used over here is it means not just masks, it probably means complete costumes, but it's certainly masks as well, because he uses the word lilvosh, but anyway. And then he continues and he describes the costumes, v'gever lovesh simlat isha, and men wearing women's dress, v'isha kli gever, and women wear men's articles, ein isur bedavar. This is acceptable. There's no prohibition. She'ein mechuvanin elul desimcha ba'alma, because their intention is for simcha. Then he adds something else, which again is somewhat confusing. V'chein b'levishat kilayim d'rabanan, and likewise one can wear a rabbinic level prohibition of shatnez, which I'm not going to define what exactly is the Torah, what exactly is rabbinic, but why in the world should you be allowed to wear such a thing? This seems quite strange. Why on Purim would Purim have such an antinomian character to it that you can go against Jewish law or against the rabbinic law? And then he does add on and say v'yesh omrim da'asur, and there are those who say that these things, presumably it's both, but at least it's claimed rabbanan, are not allowed. Aval haminhag kisvar harishona. The custom is, like I said originally, that these things are permitted. And then he adds other things which you may find legally problematic. V'chein b'nei adam ha-chotfim zem mizeh derech simcha, people who steal things from one another on Purim, grab things from one another's hands. Ein b'zeh mishum lo tigzol, there's no problem with theft on Purim. V'nagu kach, and that's how people behaved. O buvad shelo yasad davar shelo kehogen al pi tuvei ha'ir. and that's conditional that they don't do something which is inappropriate, as defined by the leaders of that particular time and place. So this does give us a little bit of a picture regarding how people behaved themselves in at least 500 years ago on Purim. We have people wearing shatnez derabanan, people dressed in drag, and stealing things from one another, which sounds like everyone was having a happy time. Now, depending on if you like this or you don't like this, I would almost say needless to say, but sometimes one has to say things which are needless to say. Needless to say, there have been rabbis throughout the centuries who were not necessarily completely comfortable with everything that I just now read. I mean, you could imagine that not everybody would necessarily agree that you can steal, dress and drag, and wear shatnez derabanan on Purim, because what exactly is the license to do these things? And which one of those three, by the way, do you find most disturbing?
Stealing.
Oh, stealing bothers you the most?
We live in an age where lots of people go around dressed in rags, so maybe we're used to it.
Well, every year when my kids come and say to me, well, why don't you dress up on Purim? I say, what are you talking about? I'm your mother. So they've never fallen for it, have they? I'm deep undercover. Well, this year I just want a British passport. I'll say I'm an Israeli spy. Or French.
I'll sell it to you.
You'll sell it to me.
When they say stealing, do they mean to steal it and to keep it afterwards? Or do they mean that you return it afterwards?
No, they were talking about like grabbing things from one another. Chotfei means to grab. They were grabbing things from one another, which means, yeah, and presumably in fun, otherwise. Now, the truth is, and I'm getting way ahead of myself, the truth is the stealing part is actually the easiest to contend with. The stealing is the easiest thing to contend with, even though you can say, hold it, there's a Torah law. Torah law is you're not allowed to steal. But there is a general principle that when it comes to monetary law, then the Beit Din has a great deal of latitude. So the Beit Din can determine that this thing, I mean, they could say, you need to give tax to this, you need to pay a tax over here, or you need to pay this to this person. They have that right. So once a court has rights over monetary issues, then it makes it very easy to say, on Purim, there's a free-for-all and people can take things from one another. So I'm just saying that and we'll see people who suggest that, but that's actually going to be the easiest thing. I mean, how can somebody come and say that shatnez derabanan is possibly allowed? I mean, that sounds preposterous. Yes? I know. That's why I don't want to get into details over here. It may make a difference if wool and linen are actually woven together into one garment, or maybe that they're connected in a different type of way. Right. So, but by the way, should intention have anything to do with shatnez? Well, how many of you check for shatnez before you try on a garment in a store? I'm not even going to ask how many of you check for shatnez after you buy it. I mean, that I would hope, or at least read the label. If it says on the label 100% wool and linen, so you know that you have before you bought it, you noticed the label. That's right. So that could be somewhat of a problem if it's shatnez. But it's interesting because when you try clothing on in a store, you're not going to test it for shatnez beforehand. So why that may be connected as well. But the idea of the men wearing women's clothing and women wearing men's things, that is something which certainly some of the commentaries found somewhat problematic. So let's take a look. Let's start with the Gra, number two. And I already gave you a hint of what the Gra was going to say. Masha Nahagu, and so on, what our custom is. And now he quotes a source, Kamasha Ketavah Perka Gozo Batra, Mutar Lovosh Kalayim, Lahavir V'chule, Kevin She'ein Mitkaven Lahana'a Levisha. There are certain circumstances put on when you don't have intention to wear it. Now that's very funny, because what he is telling me is that intention is significant by this. And by the way, when you're trying clothing on, you're not wearing it because you want to wear clothing. You want to put it on to know if you should buy it. So therefore, you may not be guilty of wearing shatnez because you're not wearing shatnez. You're trying on shatnez. And don't give me a hard time about this, but that's different. Trying something on is different than wearing it. And you already see that from the Gemara here. Ukolshkein lemefer shimsham kidei lehit naker. Anybody know what lehit naker means? To make yourself into a nachri. Lehit naker she yisavrushahu nachri. V'lamdumi divrei tosfos, which means what happens if I need to go undercover? Not because I want to wear non-Jewish clothing, but there, let's say there's a pogrom or something, I need to escape. Can I put on non-Jewish clothing? And by the way, do I have to be concerned if the non-Jewish clothing is made of shatnez? Which means I'm not putting this on because I want to wear clothing, I'm putting this on because I want to wear a disguise. So the Gra is telling me something very interesting, that if I'm putting the clothing on because I want to wear a disguise, it's not the classic use of clothing. What's the classic use of clothing? So you don't dress like Vashti. I mean, that's also a good costume. That also never works. Yes, what should I wear? I said, dress as Vashti. But that doesn't seem to work.
The Isser of Shatnez in the Torah is Lo Ya'aleh al Gufcha. It doesn't say Lo
Tovash.
It says Lo
Ya'aleh. It says Lo Ya'aleh, Lo Tovash. Okay, we'll debate this. Right, we have one place, Lotubash, which the Gra is apparently understanding from the Gemara, that is the reason that you can't put it on. So he understands that that's the definitive one. Anyway, we're not going to go into the whole thing about Shatnez, but it's very interesting that he does bring in intention over here, which may be the leeway in order to allow at least the Shatnez problem. Returning to our potential cross-dressing, the Bach in source number 3, the Bach writes, Uma shenogim bepurim levosh partzufim v'gever levesh simlat isha v'chulei katav harimintz tam ledavar. Now, the truth is that if you looked at the very last line in the first source, where the Rama got it from, it says tshuvat maharimintz, that he got this from somebody known as Mahari Mintz, who we'll see further exactly who he is. So the Bach here is telling us that which the Rama quoted really came from the Mahari Mintz, and he gave it a justification. This v'chein katav Mahari Mintz tamlo davar v'gad shulchan aruch meviu kan ve'eino nachon liniut da'ati, which in clear and simple English means I think he's wrong. V'kfar herachti b'zeh b'yerodeya, sof simon kuf peibet. And I wrote about this at length in Yerodeya kuf peibet. Anybody want to guess what Yerodeya kuf peibet is about? It's about the laws of men wearing women's clothing, and so on and so forth. He goes there. I wrote much more about this. The Mishnah Brura, in source 4. Harishonim, I am b'yerodeya, simon kuf peibet, shekotav shamataz, b'shem habach. Now, why would the Taz quote the Bach, and why is he not quoting the Bach? I can't tell you why, but the reason the Taz quoted the Bach is because the Taz was the Bach's son-in-law and student. And he writes, Sheyesh levatel min hagzeh, hein bipurin o besimchat nisuin. So now what do you now know? That they used to do with this by weddings as well. Actually, if anybody's interested in when they would do this, I have two articles for you. If anybody wants it, you'll have to email me and I'll be happy to send them to you. One is an article by Professor Yaakov Spiegel, which is in a book of mine which came out very recently, which is articles which were in honor of Professor Avram Grossman. And here he has an article called Chilufei Bigadim Ben Gvarim Lenashim B'Moadim Yuchadim, Cross-dressing by Special Occasions in Jewish History, including Purim, including weddings, including Jews maybe going to masquerades and other such things. And he wrote an incredibly in-depth article. You also have an article over here by Herman Pollack, which is on an historical inquiry concerning Purim masquerade attire, which also goes through the historical background of many of the situations. I mean, this article, again, some interesting things, but a lot of information in terms of the historical background. And I can assure you that Jews used to put on other genders clothing by weddings, by other occasions as well, but certainly, they did it on Purim. And the Mishnah Brura writes over here, quotes the Taz, who quoted the Bach. What? L'sameach atan v'kala. Listen, not all weddings are British weddings. Let's. no, the it was for simcha.
This is an American lady.
This was for simcha. This was to make. Was to make people happy.
You don't see that people put on things when they're dancing in front of the chatan and kamash.
Sure. Dresses.
I think some of you should try it. It could be very funny. Anyway.
That's if they go on this opinion. If they go on this opinion,
I can't. No. I just said I think some of you should try putting on dresses. That's what I said. You didn't pay attention carefully. I'm disappointed. You generally do. He says over here, he quotes the Taz and Shem the Bach, source 4, Sheesh the Vatel ben Agzeb Purmo b'simchat nisuim, v'kach chasav ba'or ha'gola. The Or HaGola wrote little notes on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, give you the source for things, and it was the Vilna Gaon's great-grandfather. V'im kol malbushim shel ish, rak malbush echad shel isha. If a man's dressed in completely men's clothing, but has like one woman's item, v'nikarim heim, which means if a man is wearing his bekesha and is wearing his spadok, but he's wearing a pink blouse, that may look very funny. And, no? And what the Mishnah Brewer then is saying is that that may be possible, that that's not the prohibition, which really gets us to the point, what is the prohibition of wearing other gender's clothing? Is it when one is completely dressed in the other gender's clothing, whereby one cannot even tell that it is someone from the other gender? Or is it even wearing one item of clothing that, you know, you take even the slightest item of clothing which belongs to the other gender, and that's it, you broke the Torah law? So there's a real big difference between those positions. The Mishnah Brewer over here is quoting the Prima Gadim as saying that if you're only wearing one thing, so that's going to look pretty funny, and therefore that's not going to be the prohibition. Yeah.
This happened years and years ago on a Purim, when two of my kids who resembled each other, a boy and a girl, exchanged clothing for the Purim party. And, of course, they were under the age where it would be a problem. But the question is, if they were not recognized as who they really were, would that make a difference?
So let's see. But I'll tell you two things about that. One thing is that the first time I met my sister-in-law, which is my brother, who's a rabbi, his wife, she was dressed as a chassid, and we were by her Purim party. We did not know that it was a girl. And later on, somebody told us that, oh no, the girl that he's going out with was there. And we're going, like, what are you talking about? And it turns out she was the chassid.
Yeah.
She was the chassid. And she, you know, had payas where hair came out. And it was a really good costume. Apparently, she followed the Mahari mince over here. Second, I got a phone call from a parent who was very distraught a couple of years ago, and I had taught one of her children, another one of her children now live in our neighborhood, and a third one was learning in the mirror. And she said that she had heard that the year before, a number of girls from Beis Yaakov dressed up as yeshiva bachrim and went and were in the mirror and were dancing on Purim during the Purim Suda, during the Purim Yeshiva with the boy, which apparently is as good as it gets. Now, I've been in yeshivas during Purim parties, and believe me, if this is what you're tempted to do, there are much better things that, you know, you could try. But listen, why was she worried? She was worried that if girls can do that, then maybe Arab terrorists can do this, and they're going to blow the place up. And I try to calm her down that the truth is, there's enough alcohol there that all they needed, like, was one match, and the whole place would have gone. But apparently, this has been done in recent times. And listen, maybe it's somebody in this room, so I don't want to say anything. But what we do find in the Mishnah Brura is he limits it, and he says that maybe if it's only one item of clothing. So you can. This is what to talk about. And then he writes at the end, "V'ayin b'Knesset Agdola uvishla shizhiru l'harchik mizeh." They both warned to stay away from that. And again, I wonder if the Mishnah Brewer is quoting the Shlah correctly, and we'll look at the Shlah in a moment. Regarding the thing about lo tigzol, that, you know, you can go stealing things. Well, l'fizeh, once you're allowed to do it, he writes, "L'fizeh motu levarech hamashachotfin." Which means if I steal from you a hamantashen, no, what's the problem? If you steal food, you're not allowed to make a bracha on your stolen food. Dvar Hashem Bazah, that you can't steal food from somebody and say, thank you, God, for the food. God didn't give you that food. You stole the food. That's a food that was acquired via illicit activity would not be food you can make a bracha on, which I say to some of my son's friends who walk in our house, that they cannot make a bracha on that food. You're stealing if you take that. Of course, they don't listen to me because she says, it's fine, go ahead, take what you want. And besides, I don't know if they're so careful either way about this. But let's... V'nahagukach, but nonetheless, the Rama wrote, this was the custom. Hainu, may eight kriyat ha-megillah, ad leil sudat purim, shem shnei leilot v'yom echad. So you have, this year it would be Saturday night, all day Sunday, through Sunday night, you can steal people's food and make a bracha, and all, meaning all bets are off. We have a little more than a 24-hour... Right, Michot, sorry, I forgot where you people live, which means for you it would be from Sunday night, all day Monday through Monday night. I mean, presumably a lot of people would start the Purim Suda Le'et Erev, and then the Purim Suda would go into the night as well, so that's what he's saying over here. So let's look at the Shla that he quoted. The Shla is the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, which is a book which combines a wonderful combination of halacha, philosophy, Kabbalistic teachings, but really fuses them together. One of the first sources that takes the teachings of the Arizal and brings them to Europe. Rav Yishayo Horovitz is his name, in source number 5. He quotes, if a tshuva remins, simen tet zayin, kasav demutu levosh partzu fim, lo shenot bigdei ish lo bigdei isha, v'chein lehefech. Which means he remins brings down that you can do your chorus dressing. Me'acha she'en mitkavnim el l'simcha ba'alma. Why can you do this? Because your main intention is simcha. Hu hadin levishat klein d'rabanan, and such is the case regarding Kalayim d'Rabbanan. Aval ani omer, so he's about to limit it, ani omer, lav mishnat chasidim hu. This is not the behavior of the pious. He is not talking about chasidim with pious, he's talking about pious people because he lives before the Baal Shem Tov and never heard of such chasidim. But he says this is not pious behavior. Vishomer nafsho yurchak mizeh, and somebody who's concerned about their soul will stay away from them. But what is he referring to? Luvosh klayim afil drabanan, to wear even rabbinic level klayim. O lichtof michavero shelo brishuto, or to take something from their friend without permission. Kizehu simchat holulut. This is not a holy simcha. This is holulut. What is holulut?
Wild behavior.
V'kvar katavnu l'smorach b'simcha shel mitzvah. We already said, no, the proper simcha is one of mitzvah. Now you tell me, did the Mishnah Berurah quote this correctly or no? No. The Mishnah Berurah, what did the Shla say and what didn't he say? And where did the Mishnah Berurah quote this? That's what's interesting. Exactly.
He doesn't refer to
the clothing over here.
Right.
And the Mishnah Berurah quoted this.
Right.
Which means he quotes this regarding the clothing, and that's not what the Shla said. Again, I could be misreading this, but I don't think that I am. The Shla, he quotes all three of the things, but then he says, but it's not proper behavior, but he only says regarding two of the things, which means regarding the clothing, the Shla did not seem to have a hard time, and the Mishnah Berurah gives you the impression that the Shla, in fact, did. Listen, if the Mishnah Berurah was looking for someone to tell you not to do it, he could have quoted the Bach and he could have quoted the Taz, which he did. He didn't have to quote the Shla for this. I don't know what to say. People who want to defend the Mishnah Berurah and everything that he wrote will have to work a little harder to somehow try to defend this, but the Mishnah Berurah seems to have understood the Shla differently than I do, and you can judge for yourselves. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about the dressing and these customs, and he writes, Uma shenagu biyomim kodmonim. That's already interesting. What they used to do. Apparently, the Aruch HaShulchan, who lived in the 1920s, he was an old man already then, but he lived in Navardak, so apparently Navardak was not a real happening place, because he tells you that's not what's being done in the Vardak. He says, "Uma shenagu biyamim kodmonim b'levishat partzufim mishatnez v'shel ish l'isha achshav lo nagu kain." Because we don't have this custom. V'chei mishezik chayav l'shalem, and somebody who causes damage has to pay. the ata, because now in our day and age, ba'avonotenu harabim, due to our enormity of our sins, arva kol simcha ve'ein anu b'madregazu, we're not on the level that they used to be on. Which means in the olden days, they used to be able, in the olden days, they can do these. What he's saying is in the olden days, they would do all these things totally l'shem shemayim. In our day, we're not really able to do that. And then he says, "Umasha kotav ramav isif chet hula kemash nagu biyamav v'lo achshav." And the Rama was telling you what went on in his day, and not in our day. By the way, there is a rumor. I can't tell you if it's true or not. There is a rumor that the Rama himself used to dress up on Purim. There was somebody known as Akiva Schlesinger, Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, who quotes that the Rama who died at the age of 33, and he gives a whole bunch of things about 33 good things that he did, and apparently somebody gave a eulogy for the Rama with the number 33, and he died on the 33rd day of the Omer, Lag BaOmer, and there's a whole bunch of things with 33. So he only finds 32 good things, and then the 33rd thing that they said that he did is that he used to dress up on Purim, and by Purim night, which means that by the end of Purim, he would go door to door, but dressed up as somebody else, saying it's time to daven Maariv and try to bring people to shul. That was the 33rd thing. But it's noted within various articles that you see that the Rama himself not only quotes this, but he himself would wear. Now, it doesn't say in that teaching whether he dressed up as a woman when he would do this, but the Rama apparently did dress up. Now, let's be honest a second. The whole custom of dressing up on Purim, which is far, I think if you'd ask the average kid, is the main thing of Purim. Where this comes from and why this started, that's not so simple to explain. And apparently it was far better known in Ashkenazic sources than in Sephardic sources and customs. The best explanation I can give you for the custom would, but again, this is like really total, you know, like Monday morning quarterback or why somebody would have started to do this. The simple thing would be that it's funny. And it's funny and it's simcha and that brings simcha and that would be then together with the weddings. That's the simplest explanation. If you want a deeper theological explanation, you can say that the whole hatred of Amalek against Am Yisrael begins between the hatred between Esav and Yaakov. And that begins when Yaakov dresses up as Esav and goes in to get the bracha. So you can say, well, what a mistake that was. And maybe we never should have done such a thing. Yaakov never should have done such a thing. So by continuing to dress up, we're saying, no, we accept that what Yaakov did was correct. So I said that's the deeper explanation. But I can absolutely assure you that there is not one person in this whole country who will dress up in Purim and have that in mind when they do it. So and they probably just think it's funny. So let's now go to the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, which talks about the laws of dressing, or the laws of Beged Isha, or Kli Ish. Lot, source 8. So, first we'll just do the Levush, and then we'll look at the source.
Does it also say that dressing up was only to dress up when you were a woman as a man, as a woman, not all those things we are doing now, because
right.
We don't talk about different.
Right, no one said to dress up as a cowboy. You don't. No, you don't see any of those things. It's at least 600-700 years ago. Already from the Baal, and again in Ashkenaz we find people doing this. The Levush, very authoritative halachic authority in Ashkenaz, in source 7, then we'll get to the Shulchan Aruch writes, Umasha Nagu Levush Bipurim Partsufim, Vegever Levush Simati Isha Isha Kli Gever, Ein Isir Bedavar. Again, he's justifying that which people do. There's no problem with this. Hoil ve'ein mekavnin ela l'simcha ba'alma, which means why are they doing this?
For fun.
V'chein b'livashat klaim drabanan nogin heter mishum simcha. V'chein b'nei adam achotfim zem izeh ein mishum lo tigzol b'vad shelo yasu shelo kahogin l'fi rot enei tuve'ir, which means levush over here is almost word for word with the Rama. They both agree on this. And again, these are the really early Ashkenazic halachic sources, and they're backing it up. In the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, which talks generally about the laws of dress, in terms of Beged Ish, Beged Isha, Lo Ta'ade Isha Ede Ish. A woman should not wear Edim. How would you translate Edim? It means finery over here of man. Kigon shetasim birosha matsnefet okova oltubash shiryon ukiyotzebo. Anything which is a normal headgear of a man, a woman shouldn't be wearing it. which you see a very important qualitative point. And how is this defined? It's defined based upon a particular place and time. Or for a woman to get her hair cut like a man. And I'm expectedly someone here to say, but what do they care? Because they're going to cover it up anyway. But it seems to be that even to have one's hair cut like a man would be a problem. V'lo ya'ade ish, ade isha. And a man should not wear the finery of a woman. Kigon shi'ovosh bigdei tzvu'im, including colors. V'chalei zahav b'makom she'ein lov shemotam. Hakelim. Again, where it's not the custom for men to wear such things, a man shouldn't wear it. V'emizim oto achali ela nashim, where only women would wear this particular thing. Here the Ramah adds, v'afilu be'echad min habagadim asur. Remember our question that we had before, whether it was all the clothing. He says even one thing of clothing is a problem. Afa pisha nikarim bishar bigdeihem shehu ish o isha. That even one item would be a problem. He seems to understand that the law is absolute, and will continue because this may then come out to be very interesting. Sif Vav, which is the next law, we do cutting up a whole butt, but this is relevant. It also says, V'chein asur le'ish la'stakel b'mar'eh. A man is not a look in a mirror. Why can't a man look in a mirror? Because this is something which women do. Because only a woman would have to look to see what she looks like. A man, what should this make a difference? But you have it written in very clear terms that men should have been out looking in mirrors. As I said, this is very, very relevant. And here the Taz, who quotes from the Bach, writes, Lo tade isha mashma derech idui v'kishut asur. Aval imo senkim ibnei hachama ot sina ogishamim ein isur. Now that's a very interesting heter. What did he just now say? That last Shabbos, if my wife was cold, am I allowed to take off my jacket and hand her my jacket because she's cold? But she's wearing a man's jacket. So is that allowed as far as the law is concerned? Absolutely. Because why is she wearing it? For protection. She's not wearing it as clothing. She's wearing it when she's cold. So therefore, chivalry is not dead, just severely wounded. And one would be permitted to put on clothing, as you see, of the other gender in order to protect oneself from the cold or from the rain and so on. That seems simple to me. And he says, and similarly, men are allowed to take a haircut in front of a mirror when it's necessary. So again, you just notice the mirror came into this. You would not have understood this reference otherwise. But when necessary, a man can use a mirror, and we will see as we continue when it's necessary. Then he goes on to quote the law regarding Purim. Over Arachaim Simin, Tafrich Tadivav, Ivi Ramah, Dafilu Bnei Simcha Bepurim, Hamin Hagla Hatir, that one is even allowed to do these things on Purim. Over Uva Arachaim, one second, Ken, Vizev Afal Gavtiyesh Osrim. Umori v'chami, my teacher and father-in-law, Zal, katav sheyesh lasuridzeh, vivirai mimasha katav rav avram mimitz. Now let's not get confused between rav avram mimitz versus mimintz. These are not the same people. La asur la sotkein, but me simcha chatan o kala. He says that you're not allowed to do this even for a wedding. V'hashomei la liisur, and the person who adheres to the prohibition, tavo alav bracha, he will be blessed. I don't know which bracha, but there is a bracha waiting for such people. Ki yesh harbe michsholot chas v'shalom. There are many problems that can come out of this. Mizeh sheholchim biyached b'li heker ish o isha. When one does not know if the person next to them is a man or a woman.
So he's specifically talking about cross-dressing here.
Yes. Right. But what's the fun of dressing as a clown? The Uraim is who we quoted before. That was Eliezer ben Shmuel of Metz. This is somebody who's considered to be one of the Balei HaTosfot. So this is a fairly early source. He's defining the law of Beged Ish and Beged Isha. Lo yekli gever al isha, v'lo yebosh gever simlat isha. Katuv b'parsha kiteitze, lo yekli gever, the Chomer, Pirish HaMikra, Pirish HaRa'avi, Rav Loza ben Yaakov, Detanya b'Sifri, Umaytila ben Nazir, and we'll go through all the sources, Lo Yekli Gever, Matala Lo Im Lulman Lo Livosh Ish Simlat Isha, V'Isha Simlat Ish, Hare Kray Nemar To'eva, Uma To'eva, the Torah uses the word To'eva in this context. What is a toeva? An abomination. So what's the abomination? So he explains. Ela shelo yuvash ish simlat isha v'yelech v'yeshev ben hanashim v'isha simlat ish v'telech v'teshev ben hanashim. Which means, what? Don't sneak into, well, Purim. Purim could be different. If any of you recall, we'll come back to the source in a second. In source number 3, source number 13, lo yekli gever al isha v'lo yubash gever simlat isha, ki to'avat Hashem elokecha kol ose'ele. This is an abomination, people do these things. Rashi writes on that source, Rashi on the Chumash, very accessible source, Rashi writes, lo yekli gever al isha shetihe domeh le'ish, kidei shetileich bein anashim she'ein zu elu l'shem ni'uf. Which means, what's he talking about? What's the abomination? Or again, v'lo yibash gever simlat isha leilech v'leshev bein hanashim. Ki toeva lo asra tara elu levush hamevi lidei toeva. What did Rashi say? What's the abomination? That only when this is done for an abomination. I'll ask you again. If it's raining outside and I have a jacket, am I allowed to give it to my wife to put the jacket on? Why don't I say this is a toeva? What's the toeva? It's very clear. What's the toeva? The toeva is when you cross-dress and then try to pass yourself off as the other gender and then go, the man, mingle, like the man can go to the forbidden place, a woman's bathroom, to figure out why three women need to go at once. I mean, this is one of the great mysteries of modern times. Or what? Or a woman would not be able, I guess the other alternative would be to sneak into the mirror and try to dance on Purim with the various men, that the prohibition would be to pass yourself off as the other gender in order for this to lead to something which is completely inappropriate. So the Urayim over here said this as well. The problem over here is the complete dress. Let's go back to source 13. Hilkach, Yizaher Adam Shelo Yitaken B'Tikunei Nashim V'Kol K'Minhag HaMakom. Therefore, a man should not wear women's clothing. And he again gives us the same qualification. What is men's clothing or women's clothing? Everything is dependent upon that time and that place. I'm back in source 10, in the middle again. Hilkach, therefore, yizaher adam shelo yitaken b'tikunei nashim. A man should not wear women's things, v'kol kimanag hamakom, b'tikunim u'milbushim sherigilot nishay hamakom, litaken liot malbusheim, chalukim, milbushei anashim, mikulam yeh muzar shelo litaken v'isha b'moshei ish, meaning the complete dress which is in that place, she'en kiyotze b'moshei isha, uluvosh afilu arai, for a person to do this even, just in a non-permanent way, v'afilu v'derech tzchok, and to do this in a humorous way.
What is arai?
Non-permanent.
That's arai, that's aleph resh ayin yud.
That's what he means here. That's arai. Asur sharei lo chalaka katuv ben kevela arai. The Torah did not establish any difference between something permanent or something temporary. And since I've seen men do this, this I find very troubling. So here, the Urayim tells us a couple of things which are interesting to us. First of all, what did he say? That the prohibition is to completely look like the other gender. That's the problem. Secondly, he told us, but once that's the problem, doesn't make a difference if you're doing it for 10 minutes or if you're doing it on a permanent basis. This would not be allowed. Okay? Now, let's look at the Mahari mints. If you're interested, that's Rav Yehuda mints, 1408 to 1508. He lived either 100 or very close to 100 years. He was born most likely in Germany, and then he moved to Italy. Part of the tshuva that he's going to get to over here is what things were like when he was in Germany, and how in Italy maybe people are questioning. Al dvar levishata partzufim, regarding people and their costumes, shenogim levosh bachurim v'gam bitulot, That means young men and young women. Zikenim im na'arim bipurim, elder and younger. Hinei ra'iti shekvar pasak lahatir. I've already seen someone else has dealt with this. Ahuvai, somebody who I like a lot, and the rest of the sentence are nice things to say about Mahari Eliakim Segel, who the name doesn't come up to the next line. Vehotzi keor mishpato kasher numuko imo. Virayotav mochachin alav ki ilu yatsu mipi hagvura. And he brings proof for this as if it was the word of God coming from heaven. Al kein hamerher acharav, anybody who questions or doubts what he's writing, kimerher achar hashchina, is as if you're questioning God. That's very strong language he's using here. He's saying what he says is absolutely correct regarding this permissibility of cross-dressing on Purim. There's no question about this. He says, nonetheless, afani amarti lavi ra'aya lahatir, I'm going to bring some more. Not, God forbid, do I question what he wrote. I'm just going to bring in some more proofs. We'll go over to the page a little bit. Next page, page 3. Litein tam, demitzu litein tam lavi ra'aya, ma ra'u al kacha gdolei v'chasidei olam. The great and the pious people, he's telling you from when he was growing up, Shenit Gadalti Etzlam. He says, I was raised, there were very Orthodox Jews there. And again, he's talking about in Germany. These were righteous people, these were wonderful people. Ra'u b'neihim u'b'noteihim, chataneihim v'kaloteihim. Again, he goes, I remember seeing some great rabbis and their children and their sons and their daughters, their sons and their sons, and their daughters and sons-in-law. So you're talking about adults as well, certainly. Lovshim otam b'partzufim. They put on costumes. Vishinui bigdeihim, bigdei ish, bigdei isha. And they trade it over, like your son and your daughter did. But here, not talking about little kids. V'chein lehefech. If there would be even the slightest possibility of a sin, God forbid for them to have been silent and not to have protested. Certainly if they were breaking something with Torah, they certainly knew that this was completely allowed. And there is no prohibition to this whatsoever. By the way, now you see why the Rama wrote that this was a custom. Because over here, there are a number of authorities writing in very strong language. This is what people, not just a theoretical question somebody asking, they're both saying this is what people did, and therefore the Rama, again, which is his want, to quote what Ashkenazic custom is. And Lavush quotes what Ashkenazic custom is. Okay, let's continue. Next, where it's underlined, venerally, Rai Ledvrayim, may he brighter, the mighty Bemesechet of Ozara. He brings proof from a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Beperek Ein Mamidim, Amat Nithan Ve'ein Mestaprim. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to get a haircut by a non-Jew. Why? Because you don't want to put yourself in a situation the non-Jew pulls a knife on you. Continue. Taner Rabbanan, but the rabbis teach, Yisrael Mestaprim Ben Agoy, Ro'e B'mar'ah. He's allowed to look in the mirror, Ve'einu Choshesh. Which means that if you're letting a non-Jew cut your hair, but if you have a mirror in front of you, then it becomes allowed. So hold it. Because then you can watch him. Then you can watch him. So he's saying over here, and he goes and he quotes from a Tosafot, but what's the problem with the mirror? So he'll go on to tell us, the problem with the mirror is that this is something normally done by women. So being that mirror, and again, he's telling you a historic reality. As far as Tosfot is concerned, it's one Tosfot. Men didn't use mirrors. Men probably did not care that much what they look like. Women use mirrors. So therefore, we even saw that it made it to the Shulchan Aruch that men should not use mirrors. So he's saying, but the fact that it's allowed in certain cases, he's going to use this as the beginning of his heter over here. Now, I'm not going to get into all of the details, but let's go down a little bit more where it's underlined. V'chein mashma b'tosfot, mari shmuel b'shem Rabbeinu Moshe, shemisha misaper atzmo, mutar l'rot b'mareh. What if you give yourself a haircut? Are you allowed to look in the mirror? So he advises this. He says, this may be a good thing. Why? Shelo yachbol atzmo, that you don't do damage, which you can even do if you look in the mirror. When are you not allowed to do it? So no, this is really what he wanted to get to. When are you not allowed to do it? If your intention is to beautify yourself like a woman. Not to make yourself look like a woman, but your use of the mirror is like a woman's use of the mirror, which means you want to make yourself look nice. That you can't do. But why can you use a mirror then to cut your hair? Why using the mirror? Because you don't want to cut anything off that is supposed to be there. I mean, we look better if both ears are there. So he says that's not prohibited. Because the prohibition over here is, what's the prohibition? To make yourself, is to use the mirror like a woman uses the mirror. By the way, you can now go, and next time any of you who wear trousers, some man who comes and says to you, you can't wear this, this is women's clothes, say, yeah, when's the last time you looked in the mirror?
Is it still prohibited
for men? Wait, why can't this day and age? I'll continue. But you saw the Shulchan Aruch wrote, man can't look in the mirror. But what's his point here? What's the heter that he's building? He's saying the problem of using a mirror is to make yourself look nice. But what if you just don't want to cut off your ear? Right? And now what's the basis? The basis is because the Gemara already said that you can get a haircut from a non-Jew who you're afraid is going to kill you if you look in the mirror, because then you keep an eye on him. So why are you looking in the mirror?
Protection.
So that's allowed, because that's not the illegal use of the mirror. Why can you look in the mirror if you want to take a haircut? You want to cut your own hair? Because that's not the prohibited use. So he's going to go on to say now, so what exactly is the problem of a man wearing woman's clothing? What's the prohibited use? Now you already know the answer to this, because you saw Rashi and you know the Urim. What's the prohibited use? It's only when it's done. It's done for Toiva. But what if your purpose over here is to make everybody laugh on Purim, or for that reason. So it's not for toiva, it's not you trying to sneak into the woman's bathroom. Why are you doing this? You're doing this because it's really funny. So if that's the case, just like using the mirror would be allowed in that case, so the dressing would be, which means, according to him, it's not the behavior, it's not the action, which becomes, it's the motivation, which becomes the prohibition. Okay, that's really is going to be the entire basis of his tshuva, that the prohibition by certain things is intention, not behavior. Hilkach, therefore, kol makom shenagu anashim kenashim, ein kamishum simat isha, kach, nearly. What did he just now say? That if the custom is for men to wear women's clothing on Purim, it's not women's clothing. Because that's the custom of men to wear women's clothing on Purim. I mean, that's really what he ends up saying. Alma, again, where it's underlined a little bit further down, Alma lahani tosfot ba'atra, the tosfot on that place in the Gemara, dinahigi anashim v'nashim b'shav, late be mishom yilbash, any clothing which both wear, there's no prohibition. Pratman delayt min chave v'sarv alom de mishom sechim v'purim, kuli alma shavim l'kula, that if it's for Purim, so therefore, he used this as a second reason to allow it. What's his first reason? First reason, it's based on motivation. Second, once this is the custom, then there's no prohibition, because now it is men's clothing, which means he's saying it's so widespread the custom for men to wear women's clothing on Purim. On Purim, it's men's clothing. So therefore, he gave you already two reasons why it should be allowed. Next, where it's underlined, Vagan Tosfot, Achinisha Eino Asarak, L'shem noy ulekishut, that you're only not allowed to use the mirror only for noy kishut domi deishut, that as a woman uses the mirror, as yesh b'mishum yilbash gever alma ba'ofen achar mutar. The same thing should be true over here. V'chein mashba b'smag b'simin samach mitzvah lo tase b'lav yekli gever alisha v'lo yibush gever simlat isha dekavanat halev halavin elu tolin. Where the smag says this specifically, that this is based upon intention. If you want to see that smag. Source 12. Shelo yivosh ish malbushim amyuchadim lenashim could go in seif kinisha, which I think is some kind of a scarf, ukiyotzebo, leshevet bein anashim leniyuf, vechein ish leshevet bein anashim, vaomer. Okay, I didn't have the whole quote over here. What he's saying is that it's only done, just like Rashi told us, if it's done with the intention of niyuf, so therefore a thing is based upon intention. Anything else we have interest over here? Let's get to his conclusion at the end of, on page 4 on the top. Od nimtza b'tshuva shekatzav Rabbeinu Tuvi b'shem Rivo shekol ma'achal shechotfim ha'bachurim Mishum Simcha Purim, Afilu Shelo Bereshut, Mishat Mikra Megillah at Sofsudat Purim, Shehem Shnei Lelot V'Yamachad, Ein Behem Mishum Gezel. And no, he gets into the other things as well, into the Gezel and so on. And he ends up saying that anything which is done for Simcha, these things are certainly allowed. Okay. Just regarding the definition of men and women's clothing, one thing that you did see parenthetically along the way was that Hakol lefim minhag hamakom. And just because we're already here, I'm just going to say this quickly. If you look at source 15, this is a tshuva written by Rav Avadia in Adar, but it's not a Purim tshuva at all, even though he goes into the whole Purim discussion. But he was asked, Minahel beit ha-sefer tichon dati, Shalom bracha, odot benot hamafiot bebeit ha-sefer tichon dati, bechatzaiyot ktsarot biyoter, in parentheses he writes, mini. So, in source 15, regarding the girls, and he's in a religious school, and all the girls have to wear skirts, so what do? They wear extremely short skirts. Ve'ein biyado limchot, and he cannot protest, it's not going to work. Kila davon, libeinu nefritzu gidrei hatzniot, ve'lo yishma'u lekol hamorim, they're not going to listen. Ve'sha'al, and he asked, im ein lahadif michnasayim arukot al chatziot ke'ele. Maybe it would be better to encourage the girls to wear long pants than short skirts. Ubefrat b'yimot ha'choref sheyesh sikuyim sfirim sheyiskimu lekabel etza ladavar michnasayim al chatziot. Certainly in the winter where there's a chance, because that will be cold, that they will acquiesce. Along the way, he does go into various tshuvot about cross-dressing, and including intentions, including various times of simcha, including a tshuva of the Rambam, quoted, that's the first thing which is underlined, where we see that they would do this by weddings, and the Rambam actually, what's the Rambam's son, it's probably more likely, protests this severely. He also quotes Maharish Abu Hav in Sefer Zichronot, which I have a copy of that as well over here, who goes into great detail about Purim as well, and he protests this as well. He ends up quoting, as I said, a great deal regarding Purim also, and showing why this would be allowed. The whole prohibition really is one of cross-dressing and not anything else. So again, the middle of the tshuva, which I'm not going to read because I think you already know most of this and understand most of this, his conclusion at the end, of course, is that in this day and age where so many women, let's go to page 6, not the bottom paragraph, the one before that, where it's underlined, Va'od Jeruchat Chaim, Sha'araj Bakatav Shabachomakom Shanagu Anashim Listakel Bimara, Kimo Anashim, Ein Kamishum Simlat Ishar Vishari. So he's already quoting from the Rajba, which is fairly early, that in our day and age, men do look in the mirror, so that's loud, because it's not something that only women do, which means if only women look in the mirror, a man can't look in the mirror. But if men look in the mirror today, so then that would be allowed as well. And he continues and he says, V'hu adin kan la'acha shenit pasheta tavar bizman hazeh, belivishat michnasayim. In our day and age, where women wearing pants is something which is widespread, l'nashim barbe makamot, ein mizeh mishum lo yekli gever al-isha, you can no longer say that this is a biblical prohibition, kevan shal kolpanim, ein miyuchad le'in nashim dafka. These are not clothing for men, which means there's whole women's sections of clothing which a man would not wear that pair of pants or trousers. I don't want to get any of the British people to blush. Umikolshkein, sheyesh hevdel nikar bein hamichnasayim shel nashim lemichnasei gvarim harezek imuvoar. So he goes, that's very, very clear. Yeah, Rudy says it's okay. By the way, I skipped all the part that he says, I don't think it's right, and I think that he gives lots of reasons on why, but what he does say is that you can't say that it is a biblical prohibition when it's no longer true, which means the biblical prohibition is based upon time and place. Look, if I really wanted to, I can show you a tshuva where a man asks if he's allowed to wear trousers because where he comes from, men never wear such things and only women wore such things. Well, this was a bit earlier, but correct. The last time I flew, I was in the airport in Miami, and there was a guy sitting across from me. I hope he was from Scotland. That's all I can say. No, he looked quite Scottish, but he had a bunch of old medals on him as well. I don't know, but he really didn't have the legs for this. But
yeah. Rav Kosowski, who's my next shiur, once told us last year that he was masqueraded on Purim and he was wearing a kilt, and then they were announcing in the city that some rav died. I don't remember at home, and he didn't have time to go home and change. And he said, "Like, what can he do? Like, he can't go to this rav's funeral."
So let's go to Rav Avadia's conclusion. Let's go to Rav Avadia's conclusion. Maskana Didina, the conclusion regarding the law. Page 6, last paragraph. Maskana Didina, the conclusion of this law is Isser Gomer Livno Yisrael Lechit Pechatziot Ktzerot O Simlot Ktzerot HaNikra Nikraot Mini. And then he writes Laminim V'Lamoshinim Al Tihi Tikva. The bottom of page 6. Not very many people can get away with that. He says that to wear a mini skirt is definitely prohibited from the Torah, from the rabbis, from everything here. He goes, it's really better if girls don't wear pants, if you want to know what really his conclusion is. Bishum shehem bigdei shachutzu pritzut. He's saying to the principal, now look, girls should not be wearing short skirts, and girls should not be wearing pants. Again, what he did say is that wearing pants is not a problem of a Torah prohibition, but then he says, right, certainly the pants should be long enough to go over the knee when they're sitting down. But if the girls aren't going to listen to you, so now what's preferable, a mini skirt or pants? He says, if that's the case, then trousers are preferable to a very short skirt. Again, if any of you were debating this for your Purim costumes, which one was better, so he's very clear about this. But as I said,
this is
all year long, but most of his tshuva in the middle, he really goes through the Purim sources. Just a couple of things about the mirrors. In source 20, the Divrei Chaim is Rav Chaim Mitzanz, good Hasidish Posek. He was asked a question. Somebody asked him if a man is allowed to take a mirror and look in a mirror to see if his tefillin are in fact straight. Now I don't know how much you're into this or the laws of the tefillin one way or the other, but the tefillin are probably to be perpendicular to the nose, and they're to be the middle tefillin should come right down. The top of it should be with the hairline, so it should sit pretty much over here. And he's asked whether one it's proper to look in the mirror to see if your tefillin are right. And this is a problem which will happen every day in shuls all over the place. And if somebody's tefillin are crooked, then you should correct them. What your father would have said, either your tefillin are crooked or your head is crooked. And he would have... You'd fill in a straight, but your head is crooked. And he would have enjoyed this. He would have enjoyed that
every single day.
He would have enjoyed that a lot. So Rav Chaim Mitzanz has asked the question. So he writes, "Who divrei borut? What's divrei borut? This is an act of ignorance, or words of ignorance. Ki afilum einu mechuvanim mamash kasher. It doesn't have. You don't need to take out a pelis. What's a pelis in?" Level. You don't have to figure this out 100%. It's that a part of the tefillin is on top of a part where the nose, he says that's good. He goes, anybody who doesn't know this, they just don't even know the law. He writes, Diyadua, Diyesh Makom Barosh L'Niyach Shnei Tefillin. The Gemara says that there's a place on the head to put on two pairs of tefillin. By the way, this is not so simple. When the Gemara says that it's not so simple, if the two pairs are one and two, or one and two, it's much more likely that the Gemara is saying one and two. In fact, there are people, I mean, this is the custom of the Arizal, that people wear two pairs of tefillin at once. I mean, there's some people that wear Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, one and then the other, but some people will wear both at the same time. And generally, they'll buy smaller pairs of tefillin. But the Gemara says there's room for two pairs of tefillin on the head, but so he seems to understand it this way, which may also be a function to how big the pairs of tefillin are. Or how big your head is. So he totally makes fun of this. The Tzitz Eliezer also goes into a tshuva, the same thing, and he quotes the Divrei Chaim, and he also quotes the Satmar Rav, and where it's underlined later on the tshuva, he says, Nidnei vada sharub derub miklai Yisrael shabachol dorot v'chol makamot im gdol Yisrael micham tfilin bekneser bein amedrish v'afilu haya eizad dat mehem sheyesh tzarech l'staka b'mar b'shad ha'nachat ha'tfilin. He goes, for years and years, people have been putting on tefillin. He goes, I never heard of a shul that has a mirror. If this was proper, they would put a mirror up in every single shul to do it. So obviously, this is not something which is necessary. But it's interesting that he and other tshuvot, they come out against using the mirror. How can a man use a mirror? A man's not allowed to use a mirror. So they still accept this as being very, very simple. That men should not be using mirror even for tefillin. The one who made a big deal about using the mirror is Lubavitcher Rebbe. He also made a big deal about using very, very big tefillin, which, now if you have one pair of very big tefillin, I can assure you that you cannot miss the proper place, and it's very hard to imagine why one needs a mirror as well, but he made a big deal about it. You absolutely should use a mirror to check the tefillin, and then the rest of it comes down to how compulsive you are. So, some men are more compulsive, so then... some men are more compulsive? Some men are compulsive, so they'll not only use a mirror once, they'll check it, like, numerous times during davening. Yeah?
I mean, but if they were saying that men shouldn't use a mirror because a woman uses a mirror...
Right.
I know,
but I'm saying, but what's funny about this is there are all kinds of tshuvot that are very upset with this. Say, Lubavitcher, who are you to tell men to, who are you to advise men to be using mirrors? Since when do we see men using mirrors? Shulchan Aruch says, sure. Now again, just to calm you down, if your husband's using a mirror, you don't have to divorce them. And certainly today we find that men do use mirrors. And if men do use mirrors, it's not something which is considered to be absolutely... absurd woman-like behavior. Men do use mirrors as well. Yes.
I have to tell you, and I looked at it. I did look at it.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
In both.
Right.
It doesn't talk about behaving like a woman. It says not to wear something that a woman wears. How do they get to a mirror?
To
what's the connection?
No, because it's also kli. Also, kli is used afterwards. The word kli is also used. The Gemara understands. But by the way, the idea of the men not using the mirror as being a problem of beged isha or kli something of isha is not mentioned in the Gemara. Is not mentioned. It's first. One second. It's mentioned among the Rishonim who understand a certain Gemara in that way, but it's not the pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara understands generally men should not wear women's clothing or women's things, and you're right, this you can claim is an extension, but what's interesting about this extension is it did make its way to the Shulchan Aruch. Now let me make an observation. Let me make an observation in terms of the Ramah. First of all, the Ramah, on the one hand, wrote in Aruch Chaim that men can wear women's clothing. Then you had the Mishnah Berurah quoted the Prima Gadim saying, well, if it's only one article of clothing, then maybe that's okay. The Ramah said no. The Ramah said no, one article of clothing is not okay. Do you remember that? Which means when the Mishnah Berurah makes that point, he's not explaining what the Ramah's approach is. Because the Ramah felt a man can't wear any article of clothing. But what did the Rama feel? He felt that Purim is enough of a reason that you can do it. What's he basing himself on? The Mahari Mintz and others like that who said this is what Ashkenazi custom is. And again, the Rama will tell you what the custom is and will justify custom. The Beit Yosef will much more tell you something which is theoretical. The Mishnah Berurah is also somebody who's less concerned with custom and more concerned with theory, and he tries to quote-unquote minimize the damage over here. But if you want now to get to the conclusion, you know, of this whole topic, if one is concerned with the Mishnah Berurah would say that, quoting the Prima Gadim, that a man would be able to wear some woman's garments, but not completely to cross-dress. Although I can assure you that the Ashkenazi custom was, and this is from multiple sources, as you saw some of them and said very, very strongly, that the custom was certainly to cross-dress. The problem would really end up being motivation. And we'll go back to that in terms of the conclusion, that if somebody's doing this because they do want to pass themselves off as the other gender, then that would be something which is problematic, because that is the prohibition. If somebody's doing this because they find this remarkably amusing, so that would then become allowed on Purim, and the motivation does make a difference. And that takes us back to a number of the Rishonim. Again, you already saw this in Rashi, and Rashi's basing on the word to'eva, right? You already saw that, and there are earlier sources as well, but you saw this in Rashi, and you saw this in the Smag, you saw telling you, what is the prohibition of cross-dressing? The prohibition is doing something to pass yourself off as the other gender for the purpose of to'eva. If a mode of clothing, an item of clothing, has now become in fashion for the other gender, it could be that the first person to wear such a thing to make that fashion statement would be breaking the law. But if something becomes in fashion, then you can no longer say that this is a biblical law which is being broken. And then it comes up to other considerations, as we saw, I think, really clearly from Rav Avadya's tshuva. I mean, even at the end, he has a preference. He likes skirts more than he likes trousers. But he himself admits that you cannot say that this is a Torah prohibition. Yeah. If you'd like, but you already saw the. I mean, if you want, I'll do it.
I know what Rabbi Ovadia said. I'm just wondering if a lot of other people have gone into it.
Rabbi Ovadia's points are too strong. Again, it could be in a real small pocket of a community. It could be that, say, like in Geula, that women don't wear pants, so there you can. But I'm saying, if you look at society, his point is, I mean, early in the tshuva, if you go to a woman's store, there's whole factories that only make women's clothing, only these types of jeans are only for women, and so on, and based on colors as well, there are certain things. So it's very difficult to argue against it. The main issues are going to come down to how tight-fitting something is, and I don't know, I don't want to be the one to tell you this, but certain skirts are also very, very tight fitting. So that's going to be the larger discussion within the poskim, which means it's not really a question of pants versus skirts. It's going to be something which will come out to a completely different consideration. I once had a conversation with Rav Yaakov Weinberg, who was the Rishi of Neri Yisrael, and he said two things to me. I'll quote, he's no longer alive, so he can't defend himself, but this was a private conversation. First, he said, anybody who says in this day and age that a woman who wears pants is breaking the Torah law has no idea what they're talking about, does not understand law. And which is really Rav Avadia's point. He said it much stronger. I don't believe he would have written it with that language. He says it's a non-defensible point. You can't say it. As much as rabbis or teachers or principals would like to say to a girl, oh, you can't wear that because you're breaking the Torah law by wearing that, and they do say that, they may very well be breaking Torah laws by saying that as well. So I said to him, so then what would you say? What would be the issue? And he felt it was largely a sociological issue of identification. He said on a Torah level, a man doesn't have to wear a kippah in either, but for in our community, for a man to walk around with his head uncovered really would be saying that he's taking himself out of the community. So he saw this much more in terms of sociology than he saw this in terms of a real issue of tzniut, but there is one very strong qualification, and then again, that depends on which pair of pants you're talking about, but that also then depends on which skirt you're talking about. So yes, rabbis will, of course, the board always tell you that skirts are better, except for Rav Avadia over here, who says, hold it, v'lamal shinim v'laminim, al tehi tikva, and we have to stay away from certain types of skirts, so then I think that is... is a very strong point. In today's religious Zionist community, so girls are machmir and they wear everything. They wear pants and they wear skirts. They wear one on top of the other. I don't know if underneath the pants they have another skirt. I mean, I don't know what they...
No, that's harder.
I understand that. I have no idea of this, and somebody one day will write a whole thing describing the dress of these girls and why they do this, but all this is completely beyond me. Dress as you will, and have a happy Purim.